Alrighty, ladies and gentlemen, automotive enthusiast friends, no matter where you are on this great planet of Earth, you happen to do it again. That's right, you hit play on yet another...
Kevin, another tremendous episode of V8 Radio.
Tremendous.
That's right. You know what that's like, from, right?
No.
So you remember in 1996, when the Chicago Bulls won their third championship in a row,
the three-peat.
Yeah, the headline of the Tribune said tremendous.
Nice. On there. Okay. Well, in 96, it was tremendous.
It was.
This is the Tremendous V8 Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Oste, joined as always by our esteemed co-host, Mr. Mike Hubal Clark, who apparently is waxing nostalgic for the Chicago Bulls dynasty of the 90s.
And that was
why
good
wouldn't
stuff.
You? You know,
yeah. Who wouldn't be? It was great stuff. It was. I got to go to a playoff game against Detroit, like in 1990. That's the last time I got to see the Bulls in the Jordan era. That is, and unfortunately, they had lost that one.
Well, that's too bad.
Yeah,
but you know what happened to Detroit was where a lot of cars were built, and that's what this show is all about. Right on. If you have been a loyal listener of the V8 Radio Podcast, and of course you have, you know that we start off every episode with a riveting automotive trivia question, sometimes Detroit-based. Have you prepared a question for this episode, Mr. Kubo?
Yes, sir. So to go along with our tremendous theme today, I have a three-parter for you today.
Zing, zang, zow.
All right. All right, Kev, we're talking about remote keyless entry today.
Of course we are.
Yeah.
All day,
every day. It's ubiquitous now, and it's you can't hardly buy a car without it. But who was the first manufacturer to offer remote keyless entry? What model car and what year was it offered?
Okay, well, before I loft a tremendous answer, I am going to recalibrate my trivia question because it was going to be a choose-your-own-adventure, but now I'm going to go for the two-parter just because.
Just because.
Just throwing that out there. Yeah, Mr. Three-parter.
this is coming back at you from the last three-parter you gave me.
I did.
But here's
what
I'm going to do for you. Because I'm a benevolent overlord.
Today only.
If you buy the car today, if you get any one of the three-parters correct, you'll get the whole answer correct.
Holy Moses.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That means, you know what that means at home, listeners? That means this is a hard one. that's what this means. Okay. So the first year and manufacturer of a remote keyless entry system, and what was the model? Is that the third part?
Yeah, the model car that it was on.
From the factory installed original equipment.
Yes. It's not dealer add-on, not aftermarket. It was factory. You could get this.
So I think the first keyless entry, you know, there could be a technicality here because before they invented the door lock, you had keyless entry on every vehicle. You know, how about that?
Okay, I'm not going that deep. It was a Model T. How about that?
Yeah, you didn't need a key. You could get in. Grab the door handle and go.
Right.
I think Lincoln was probably an early keyless entry, but with the keypad on the door, which dates back to the mid-70s.
Uh-huh.
But that was not technically remote. That was you had to touch the door.
I'm glad you made that distinction.
Well, you know, I try to pay attention to this stuff sometimes. So who does that leave in competition? My mind says competition with Lincoln is going to be who else had it. And Cadillac, they eventually did. GM kind of hit it all at the same time. Corvette was the first, if I'm not mistaken, vehicle with the pass key system, which was the key with the resistor chip in it to prevent theft. And this would have gone hand in hand with that, I think. It might have been a nice, like argument ending, who's got the most advanced key in the market package. in the 83, you know, of course there was no 83, but the 84 Corvette that came out in 83 was a technological tour de force that it might have been the one. It might have been. So my first line of thought is 84 Corvette. Now, I'm also going to suggest that something happened before that, like a number of years before that. It might not have been a United States automaker because you didn't say it was. Those Germans, those Japanese, they like their technology too. And a lot of weird stuff happened in the early 80s and late 70s. Japanese cars that played records that told you to do stuff, remember?
Sure.
I think Datsun had the record player. Toyota had a tape player that played pre-recorded messages like, your lights are on.
Right.
Your lights are on.
Yeah.
Of course, Chrysler with door is ajar. Door. No, it's a door.
The rise of the riddle. When is a door not a door?
When it's ajar.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So hem and haw enough. Chrysler could have had this too. Hard to say. So giving all that nonsense I just spewed forth, I don't know, Cadillac was the mark of excellence. So maybe it was them. I don't think it was like a British, like a Rolls-Royce Bentley, because they were very refined, but not necessarily cutting edge technologically. You've got your BMW, Mercedes-Benz. Mm-hmm. I had a, you know, Mercedes-Benz for a long time had a visual feedback remote keyless entry.
How really?
About that?
How does that work?
And it used a radio signal, and you'd push the button, and a little indicator on the door handle itself would flash back to you.
Ooh.
A light that it got the message, and you could see, and so you could program it so that either the cornering light, you know, the turn signals and everything would illuminate, but you could turn that off. So it was just this little blip on the door handle, like two for open and three for lock kind of thing.
Oh.
And I believe it actually, they had them to change colors too. So, I mean, that could be thrown in the mix. I don't know. It's a tough one.
It is. It is.
Three parts. Ready? We're just going to spin the wheel of parts. We're going to say first remote keyless entry occurred in 1977. And it was a product of the Mercedes-Benz Corporation of Stuttgart, Germany.
Mm.
And the model was on the S-Klasse. Whatever the S was at that point.
Sonderklasse.
Bingo. That's my guess.
Sorry, 1977 Mercedes S-Class. That's a heck of a guess. I like how you got there, too.
Yeah. I could have gone a lot of places. I could have gone like 50s Chrysler. You know, an Imperial could have had it with like a big transmitter, you know, like a right. an AM radio transmitter.
In a bag, like those old car phones from the 80s. Carry like a battery with you. Yeah.
You'd get out of the car, right? And then you'd stand next to it and extend your antenna. and then push the button and hear, clunk. And then you could walk off.
How good would that be? I mean, it could have happened.
Could have.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So, all right. 77 Mercedes S-Class, duly noted, sir.
Yeah, I'm done already. Jeez. Okay, well, now it's your turn.
Yeah.
I got a two-parter.
Let's have it.
I mean, this is two parts, kind of a gimme, kind of a not. All right, you ready?
Okay.
What was Pontiac's first mid-engine car? And for the second part, possibly related, possibly not, when did the name Fiero first appear at Pontiac? What model year?
Oh, man. Oh, Lord. All right. Here comes the humming. All right. First up here.
I'm going to activate the keyless entry while I wait on my truck over there.
Yeah, right. All right. Pontiac's first mid-engine car. That is, ooh. I mean, Fiero is like a production car, right? Not some prototype that went to the Autorama or anything?
Well, you'll have to review the question carefully in your mind.
Okay. So what was Pontiac's? You asked me what was Pontiac's first mid-engine car?
I believe that was the question.
You did not say production car. All right. Which leaves everything wide open on that thing. Oh, Lord. Whoo, baby. I mean, of course, the Fiero is the first thing that would come to anybody's mind. I'm trying to think here. Gosh,
sometimes it's hard.
Yeah.
Sound it out. Use your words.
Fiero. Oh, heavens to Betsy. All right. You know what? Nothing's going to come to mind. I'm going to say Fiero, and I'm going to be wrong, and I'm gonna want to throat punch you through the phone when you reveal the answer.
How nice. Got that to look forward to, friends. Yeah. We'll record that. Okay. So Fiero, the first part of your answer. Now the second half.
Right. And when did the name Fiero first appear? Within the hallowed halls of Pontiac?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Notice in the previous question you put towards me, there was some discussion of the non-1983 Corvette.
Yeah.
Could be trivial. Maybe not.
Son of a biscuit, man. These questions are like right next to me, the answer, but I just can't pick them up.
Look to the left.
Yeah. But then it moves to my right.
Yeah, I see how it is.
All right. I'm going to just put us all out of our misery here. 1983 is when Fiero first appeared in the Pontiac, when they were designing the Fiero, I'm going to say.
Anno Domini 1983.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Final answer for both of us?
Yeah, just shut up and let's move on.
Shut up and move on. Sure the listeners are right there with you on that.
Yeah, right.
And they will all enjoy waiting to the end of the show with bated breath to hear the answer to these riveting.
Grand
total of five different parts of questions.
Right. I can't wait to hear how you juke me.
Yeah, nice. All right, well, now that that's over with, we just got back from the always fun and exciting, amazing event, the Triple Crown of Rodding.
How about it, man? Talk about a mind bender.
Could be trivial. Maybe not.
Yeah, we did have responsibilities. So you were in charge of the stage, and I was like your roadie, aka technical director, working the video board, working the camera angles and all that for the onstage interviews, and showing the vehicles during the award ceremony. And we had a video loop, and we had some pre-recorded messages we were showing. So
yeah, you were Captain Jumbotron.
Yeah, that's right, man. we should have had the kissing cam or something going on. That would have been great.
Maybe next time.
We're going to talk to Gary and Bobby about that next year.
For sure.
Yeah. So that first day, I didn't get to see a ton, just what was kind of at the main stage. So right along Pitt Road, they had the top 30 and some other, you know, exceptional vehicles that were on display. So I got to see some of that, and it was just that part was worth the price of admission to me.
Actually day one was like all 400 cars and trucks that entered into the Triple Crown competition.
Right. That's right.
So we're talking Nashville Super Speedway, Pit Row, is where the main stage was set up. Two giant video screens either side of this stage. We had a great sound crew. We had great audio all over the fairgrounds with individually attenuatable, that's a word, attenuatable towers of audio. So we could volume up and down in all different corners of this place. Cameras on stage, interviews happening. And then laid out right in front of us was 400 of the hottest, most unbelievable customs, muscle cars, hot rods, trucks.
Yeah, trucks, yeah.
Riddler winners, Grade Eights, America's Most Beautiful Roadsters. I mean, you name it. Yeah. All right there.
Yeah, that just doesn't happen, man.
No, 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 it doesn't. So, yeah, we had a kind of a front row to all that stuff, and you got to experience, you know, being on the crew, a little bit of the behind the scenes of that, but it also, mm-hmm. you know, it can be a little limiting, like you're saying. You didn't get a chance to just go walk the show.
Right.
Because the rest of the show was hundreds of more cars. In fact, another over 2,000 more cars.
Right.
And then 160 some vendors and
yeah.
all kinds of shenanigans going on all over the place.
So mm-hmm.
jam-packed with stuff to do.
It was amazing. I mean, Saturday morning after we got set up, we didn't have our first interview till about 10:30. So that allowed me to take a little bit of a lap around and try to see a few things. And it just wowed me every step I took. It was just so much coolness just all around me. It was amazing. I mean, this show is so next level. It's beyond what I ever thought a show could be. It's that high of a caliber of a show.
It's kind of an overdose of awesomeness.
An overdose of awesomeness. Yep.
Yeah, for sure. And then so day one is Friday, day two is Saturday, and it's over on Saturday night. So
right.
Sunday you get the chance to drive home, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to pack everything into this 2-day thing, and Saturday they invite. That's where they invite the. Basically the top 30, it comes out to be, this year it came out to be 45 vehicles
right.
were then invited to be in that same spot next to the stage. And it was the top 30 and then 15 more that were hand selected by big time fancy pants builders who created their own trophies and stuff, which was just awesome. That created its own competition in itself, which builder could build the coolest trophy.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't a total, I mean, it was 45 awards, but a few of those vehicles got multiple awards.
For sure.
If yeah. you remember, they won their class and they got a builder's award. One car got two builder's awards.
I think one car got, if I'm not mistaken, was in the top 30, mm-hmm. the Elite 10, a builder award and one of the Triple Crown awards.
That's unreal.
Yeah. And you know what I love is that, so the event organizers are good friend Gary Case, our good friend Bobby Alloway. Bobby mm-hmm. is the judge, right? So
yeah.
you can't judge 400 cars,
correct.
You know, in a couple hours. But he doesn't say that he judges them. He picks them.
Picks them, yep.
It's a pick. Mm-hmm. And I love that because, you know, Bobby is an awesome builder, just an amazing guy. He gets it, you know, more than most in the whole scene. Bobby knows what's cool from all the way across the room. So if anybody's
right.
going to pick cars, he's the guy you want to do
sure.
it because he's gonna spot the best stuff. And that's really hard there because there's so much of the best stuff that, you know, I don't envy his position, especially if people afterwards, you know, perhaps would come up to him and say, hey, why did you pick this over that?
Mm-hmm.
That's for him to defend. But I didn't disagree with a single car that was picked.
For sure. But you know what was the most amazing thing? Nobody complained about the music. Not once. And I'm not being a smart aleck here. Nobody
no.
complained about it. In fact, we even saw people kind of bopping their heads as they walked by the stage.
Yeah. Well, okay, so that's significant in my world because you know, over the past decade or however long, I've been doing a lot of stage events and oftentimes been responsible for the music.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, you can't please everybody. So, you know, you try to read the room and look at who's going to be in attendance. You look at their age, you look at what they're into, you look at their lifestyle. And then the cheap and easy way out is to play a popular radio station and just let it go.
Right.
And the thing that sucks about that is then you got to listen to their commercials
right.
and their DJ, and it's not a personal thing. So I never like to do that. But I'll do a playlist, you know, and today's technology allows you to pick a couple songs and then like Spotify will go and
yep.
and fill it up with other stuff that's similar, and chances are you got something that's pretty decent if you read the room right. Again, can't please everybody all the time. So, for example, at some of the truck events that I do in the East, like if I was doing the four-wheel jamboree in Bloomsburg, Pennsylvania, that's pretty heavy, like classic country. Okay. And on a different day, you can't mix it. But if you do like Friday classic country, Saturday you can do kind of classic rock.
Okay.
And you're going to probably live through the weekend.
You know? Right on.
A couple of years ago, I kind of stretched my wings a little bit at the Street Machine Nationals in DuQuoin, Illinois. And I kind of noticed that most of the people were of similar age to myself. And I created a 90s, you know, rock, alternative rock playlist. Threw some classics in for sure. Mm-hmm. And it played. I got some feedback. The feedback I got was an even split. Some people loved it, equal amount hated it. I call it a neutral, good to go.
Right.
But this particular event was different. And Gary Case and I had discussed how we were going to approach the music on this one. And he said the mandate is it just got to be feel good all the time. So
perfect.
This was a hand curated and engineered playlist with the intent of nothing that was low tempo, nothing that was a downer, nothing that was too dark, nothing that was too heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And it went into disco a little bit. It went into 80s, you know, Hall & Oates kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It went to well-known rock and roll, and we did a nice trick with the volume where the music was just kind of background. This clearly wasn't supposed to be a concert.
Right.
And you're right. By the end of the weekend, we had no complaints. So that's a first, pal.
Right. So now you proved you can please everybody.
Oh, man.
Look at you. You set the bar.
At least not anger most. Right. Almost everybody. Somebody now is going to, I'm going to get it now.
Yeah, right. Somebody's going to write an angry letter now.
Yeah. But no, but you know, so here's the other thing. The music sets the tone, but the content of the show is what really sets the tone.
For sure.
And I can't see how you could be upset with those cars in that attendance. The mood was killer. Everybody was just having a great time.
Yep. And I'll tell you what, typically some people's true colors will really come out during the awards if somebody didn't win something. They would say, why didn't my car win? My car's better than that car. I never heard any of that. And the whole show, the whole time we were there, everybody was just having such a great time. I didn't hear anybody complain about anything the whole time there. Everybody was just so cool. It was an amazing experience to not hear people, you know, gripe and moan about what they didn't get. Everybody was just there to appreciate these unbelievable builds that were on display for us all.
Yeah. And, you know, certainly, so in your position where you were kind of on the side of the stage, there's a chance you would have gotten some complaints because if you appear like you're part of the organization, you know, crew,
right,
people complain to you. People would come up to me on stage all the time at other events and complain because they think I have the answer or
right,
I can do something about it. This time, the stage, it was fun because our buddy Tim Strange helped out.
Mm-hmm.
And he did some of the interviews of the people that we brought up on stage. I did some of them. And then when it came to the award ceremony, Brian Brennan from In the Garage Media helped out as well. So there's the three of us. And we were able to, you know, play to everybody's strengths. That's really the bottom line. And Tim knows a lot of these builders and a lot of these cars. And Brian knows a lot of the builders and cars and a lot of the history. Mm-hmm. And I know some of it, you know, as well. So it was kind of my mission to keep everything on track and moving. And then just kind of tap Tim for his story about this one. Then tap Brian for his story on this one. And everybody just, I thought it went really well.
It did. It went swimmingly well.
So we actually recorded a V8 Radio mini podcast while we were there.
We did. That was pretty cool.
It was cool. We had the opportunity to jump up on stage and do this mini version, kind of seeing what we saw. And it got broadcast all over the entire place. So our apologies. But, but let's go live now to a pre-recorded live version of the V8 Radio podcast from the Triple Crown of Rodding. All right, everybody, we'd like to welcome you to the 2024 Triple Crown of Rodding. This is an unbelievable event here with all the different hot rods, customs, muscle cars, trucks, plus all the vendors and all the great people. It is a truly remarkable event brought to you by PPG. And the trophies, the big trophies, are sponsored by our friends at ARP and LMC Truck. And for the next few minutes, we're going to be doing something a little different. My name is Kevin Ostie, and I'm also the host of the V8 Radio podcast. And we figured this would be a great time to record one. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is a live version of the V8 Radio podcast. I'm Kevin Ostie, joined as always by our esteemed co-host, Mr. Mike Hubal Clark.
We're live and in living color.
That's right. In Nashville, man.
Yeah, man.
And the V8 Radio podcast is... you know, generally automotive theme for the most part. Today, we're obviously talking about where we're at, which is where, Mikey?
Oh, boy. We are at the Triple Crown of Rodding in Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah. So I was at this event last year, the inaugural, and it was dynamite. And everybody was wondering, hey, how are we going to be able to top last year's this year? And this is your first year. Your first impressions of this thing is what?
Well, from what I've been able to see, this show is next level. Just when I think that there can't be a show to top the last coolest show I've seen, these two cats, Gary Case and Bobby Alloway, come along and say, watch this, hold my beer, we're going to put on a show.
Yeah, well, and you're right. And it's not just, you know, Case and Alloway are clearly the guys behind this who envisioned what this show could be, but there's a cast of a lot of people that are helping out in volunteer capacities and in official capacities, working real hard to make this event go smoothly, not only for the participants, also for the vendors, because if either one of those sides doesn't have a good experience, then it's not a good show.
That is correct, and they have gone to great lengths to make sure that everything is in place, everything is smooth. If something's not smooth, it gets smooth.
Yeah, for sure. So the whole thing kind of started for us last night. We did a setup here on the stage to make sure things were dialed in, and then there was a hospitality event for some of the vendors to come out. I believe all the vendors were invited, but it was just a little meet and greet and hang out.
Oh yeah, that was like a who's who of hot rodding in that room.
Yeah,
it was like the SEMA show all over again. It was fantastic.
It was pretty special to be in that room, and I heard you know, Bobby Alloway talk about this in the past, that really the motivation for that is a chance for him to be able to get together with all of his hot rod friends, builders, and people in the industry in one room, and then again here live for the rest of the weekend.
I'll tell you what, I can't get over. I'm looking at the Kindig Riddler Award winner right across from me.
Yeah.
I mean,
there it is.
You
right
just
there.
Don't get to see that.
Except
online or in a magazine. And here I get to see it live. I'm going to put my fingerprints all over it.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Why don't you do that? So I think what's neat about our vantage point as we're talking right now, we're on the stage, which is parked in the judging area. Up and down, you've got cars four rows deep. I don't know. How far do you think it goes that direction?
It's got to be 200 yards down.
Easily. And then another couple hundred
The other way.
So we're in the infield of the Nashville Super Speedway, and the width of the whole infield basically is four rows across of cars that are competing for any of the number of awards that are presented here at the Triple Crown of Rodding. So you've got, you know, the Elite 10, the Top 30, and of course the Street Cruiser, the Hot Rod, the... you know, different classes of Triple Crown winners. But another thing that came out of this is the organizers invited some of the builders to create their own awards.
Right.
And do their own celebrity picks. And we're not talking about a tin stamp on a piece of plywood with a sticker on it.
Right, with a little plaque engraved on it. These are just bespoke, handcrafted, just over-the-top trophies that they've created. And each one is vastly different from the other. So unique. They're amazing.
So like Rad Rides by Troy has a pick award that they're going to be presenting here at the award ceremony tomorrow night. And that trophy is
the 3D print design of his land speed winning engine in a scale model.
Wow.
With Triple Crown rotting on it. And that the only place you're going to find it is if you compete for it here. Kindig, you mentioned him with the Riddler winning Corvette.
Right.
They took the 3D scan of that car, turned it into a stylized horizontal chrome.
Sliced buildup.
Yeah, like if you took like a
sliced buildup of that car.
You know what a hard boiled egg slicer is?
Right.
If you took a hard boiled egg slicer and sliced that Riddler car into chrome slices, that's what that trophy looks like. Yeah, no, you'll never see it anywhere else.
Nope. I tell you what, it warms my heart to see that there are people still building cars of this caliber, and the number of vendors that we have here today just really speaks to the strength of this industry and how strong the aftermarket is still. It's very enheartening. It's really everything to this industry.
On so many levels, and every year we see things, you know, the bar seems to get raised higher and higher. You got guys like Ring Brothers and you know, Foose, and the list goes on and on. Jesse Greening and all the different builders that are pushing the envelope. And you wonder, it's like, wow, where's this going to stop, right? But the great thing is they're all utilizing not only traditional methods of handcrafting, metal beating, you know, painting, polishing, TIG welding. They're using modern technology to create more different styles of parts, individual pieces, five-axis machining, 3D printing.
Yeah.
So it's only going to continue to rise.
All right.
And we have, you know, I think we've got our defense industry and aerospace really to thank for it, because that's where a lot of these manufacturing technologies came from.
Right.
And then as time goes on, these tools and machines became a little more available to smaller shops, and you have colleges teaching the design and the software modeling mm-hmm. strategies with SolidWorks and some of the other software applications. And you put the two together, and now there's a guy or a gal can have a hot rod shop and use this space-age technology to build parts for a hot rod, and then they bring it out here, and it blows everybody's minds.
Well, for sure. When you have things like CNC form sheet metal, you can form unique body panels that would have taken you, you know, 20 hours to make. You can almost make it an hour. You just have to get the design in the machine, hit go, and wait for it to come out.
The same thing on the flip side. Here we have some awesome traditional rods. We have cars that have been around for a long time. We just had a little chat with Jason Slover of Pete and Jake's with the California Kid and Jake's Coupe. Those are both on display. Those
right
cars
on.
Have been around for a long, long time. Everybody here knows what they are,
yeah.
And here's your chance to see that in person too. That's about the farthest thing from a five-axis CNC, 3D printed anything.
Good point.
And it's sitting right next to another one that's not, and it's totally cool.
Yeah, everything is covered here. I mean, the California Kid, my God. How often do you get to see that?
Yeah, that's the real one, right there.
The legit one.
This whole show is full of nothing but real deal cars.
Exactly. That's what makes it so great.
And also, the people that go along with it are the best part.
For sure.
You know, and over the years, I've been fortunate to be in this industry enough to get to know a lot of these people by doing these types of events or going on road trips and power tours and being in the trenches or shooting media or television or whatever. And when you come back to the event the next time and it's like, oh, yeah, dude, good to see you again. What'd you bring out this time? And we were just chatting with Kyle Tucker and a little while ago, and he's finally getting some time to work on his own projects and get some garage time. So, you know, cool cars are like the great equalizer in this world.
Yes.
Everybody thinks cool cars are cool.
Cool cars are cool.
Right?
I mean, this whole industry is almost, it's like it's emotion driven. Everybody loves to have a cool car. Everybody wants a cool car.
Yeah.
And that really drives people to build for them, and people say they go to builders like Bobby Alloway and say, I need a hot rod built.
Yeah.
And Bobby says, absolutely, let's do it.
I need something that nobody's ever seen before, and it can still happen.
Right.
All right, so real fast, anything jump out at you that you've seen here that you need to wipe the drool off of before they catch you?
That Ring Brothers car they brought in, what was it, like an F1 car with a truck body on it?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was crazy, watching that with the big blower. Just amazing car, amazing vehicle.
Yeah, that was a SEMA Battle of the Builders winner car.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And that Riddler Award winner is just unbelievable. It's got a V12 in it.
An LS-based
V12. An LS-based V12.
Yeah, Australian crazy. Block. Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. So the one that you missed that you didn't mention on the way to the restroom facilities over there, which are air-conditioned, by the way. Another reason to come
goodness.
Here.
Thank goodness.
Did you see that Pontiac Catalina sitting over there? It's like a
no,
62 or 3
it.
Convertible all laid out, custom, big wheel, but wide 8.
All right, I'll be right back.
Yeah. It's Pontiac guy. All right, so... let's kind of wrap this up a little bit. And for our listeners at home in every country that tune into this, what are you going to tell them so they can prepare to come here next year?
Prepare to have your mind blown.
Nice.
I mean, this has to be a bucket list for every car guy out there. It has to be a bucket list item.
Well, it's a bucket list item that you can do. It's easy to get to. It's Nashville, Tennessee. If you didn't get enough here, you always got Nashville down the street for nightlife, even though I don't know why you'd want to, because everything is here. But the people are great. So I would say be prepared to walk. Make sure your phone is charged, because you're going to take a lot of pictures, right?
Well, it's not just the cars here. I mean, go check out all the vendors. There's 160 vendors here.
Yeah.
If you're looking to build a car, if you're looking to do something, chances are somebody here is going to have what you need.
Well, you know, it's even another aspect of that is these vendors are here not just selling the parts. They're answering the tech questions.
Yes.
They're providing the insights. Many of them are the business owners are here. And you can talk to them and kind of become a little closer to the industry and meet somebody so that when it comes time to build the car, you got a guy.
Yeah, I know you're on your way to GearStar to figure out why your torque converter's making noise.
Yeah, well, you know, you picked up on that.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So I think this is, like you said, this is a top-tier show. This is something you got to check out. I am super grateful that Gary Case and Bobby Alloway have allowed me to come play here and do some work on the stage and allow us to chat for a few minutes.
Thank you, guys.
And do a little live version of the V8 Radio podcast because a lot of people were asking us about it. Hey, where are you guys going to be next? And is that Triple Crown really a cool show? Well, yes.
Yes, 100%.
It is.
It is the real deal.
So, I mean, as you can tell, we really enjoyed being there in person, and it was just a feast for the eyes, man, all 360 degrees.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, all these well-known builders that were there, you know, Chip Foose was there, Dave Kindig was there, you know, of course, Bobby Alloway, who's the show organizer, was there, Troy Chapanier, everybody was just, couldn't have been nicer, even the little old cue ball when I got to meet them. Everybody was so cool. So
it was, it's a little cue ball.
You know.
Well, you know, at the end of the day, it's car enthusiasts.
Yeah, for sure.
Again, everybody being in such a great mood, just from the environment, made for great conversations and great times. So we alluded before to the awards ceremony. So here's what we didn't know when you and I did the live version of the podcast. It was long before the awards ceremony.
Right.
The award ceremony, the only way I can describe it is what somebody else called it, and it was lightning in a bottle.
100%.
Yeah. So your typical show, cars get picked, a list gets made, your MCs or whatever call some names, some trophies are presented, people go home. Well, that's kind of not what happened here. So
no.
The first challenge was to arrange the vehicles in such a manner that once those top 45 got picked, they lined them up so that in order they would be coming to the stage. So the cars actually physically drove to the front part of the stage so everybody could see the car, hear it run, do the whole thing, which I think is great. It wasn't just people receiving their trophy in a crowd. And then you were doing camera control, so you could the cars actually got put up on a big screen,
right?
And, you know, so people in the back could see it. So that was awesome. But what was even cooler than that is, as these awards were being presented, again, Tim and Brian and I were, you know, kind of calling the shots and doing color commentary and whatnot. There was a kind of a spur of the moment funny thing that some of the builders, namely Noah and Charles from Classic Car Studio, their award, they picked a vehicle that was from the 80s. It was actually a
a pace truck, you know, OBS style,
right?
Chevy pickup truck, awesome, awesome truck. Mm-hmm. And these guys, their award, their trophy they made was a gold plated BMX bike.
That was kick ass.
It was really cool.
Yeah,
the bike was the trophy. So as they presented this, you know, they told me before, they're like, "Do we have time to get in a costume?" And I'm like, "Costume? I'm sure. Whatever, you know." So they put on these like chrome pants and these gold jackets and these gold Elvis glasses, and they got costume jewelry on, and they got these gold shoes that light up and everything. And it's like, you know, 80s rap meets Richard Simmons sauna suit, you know. Right. I'm not sure what the hell they were going for, but it matched the gold bicycle, you know, it was this mm-hmm. gold 80s thing. And they got all dolled up, and they presented their bicycle trophy to the winner, and everybody cheered. It was yay. And then Tim Strange says, kind of half joking, kind of half not, "Hey, you guys are going to auction that suit off for charity, right? Those pants," is what he said in specific. Right. And everyone, you know, kind of clapped. So over the course of the weekend, the Gary Sinise Foundation was the recipient of a lot of charitable donations as the official beneficiary of the event. So there was a 50-50 50-50 drawing. Mm-hmm. And then there was some other ways utilizing a ride along opportunity with a carbon C10, mm-hmm. you know, awesome road course truck. People bid on the rides to go along, and that went to the Sinise Foundation. Brian Finch and his team was also doing free ride alongs. They did like 1,200 laps of ride alongs.
Whoa.
Over the weekend, yeah.
That's crazy. In
10 different vehicles. It was crazy. So we were playing these Sinise commercials all weekend, you know, of him. And that foundation's great. You know, they do great work for veterans and first responders and, you know, people that need help. So Tim's like, "Yeah, you know, you're going to auction those pants for the Sinise Foundation." "Yeah, ha ha, right, sure." So
Tim Strange doesn't let that go.
Well, the night goes on, and we continue to hand out the rest of the awards. And the big prizes were a blueprint crate engine, an LS3, mm-hmm. that was a random draw of a name from a participant, so no purchase necessary. And then a Chevy Silverado, customized by Bobby Alloway, $70,000 truck, mm-hmm. this awesome rig. And that got given away to some lucky participant once again. So, you know, all kinds of great drama. And then it was like, "Yeah, but what about those pants?" And Tim brought it up again. Tim's like, "Well, what are we gonna do with those pants?" And he looked at me and I looked at him and I said, "Well, let's start the bid." I just start doing my worst, you know, auctioneer impersonation. "Who's got $100 for the pants? Here we go." And there it went. And I think by the end of the pants auction, it became two pairs of pants,
yep.
both the two guys from Classic Car Studios, plus the jackets, plus the jewelry, mm-hmm. and the Elvis glasses, had the guys up on stage. And then it was, people were bidding higher to see Alan Johnson put the pants on,
yep.
and Alloway put the pants on stage.
Yeah.
And I got to say, when Alloway, he almost became Bobby all the way when he dropped his pants. I'm not sure he was prepared for that.
I don't think he was.
Kindig is matching bids. I think he bid $3,500 to see, you know, those guys put the stuff on. And I mean, it was
right.
So at the end of the day, the outfits alone raised an extra, I think, $12,000 for the Sinise Foundation.
That is insane.
It was insane. And it was so much fun.
But that's not where it stopped.
No, that's just where it started.
Yeah.
And then after that, people were just throwing $100 bills up on the stage. Foose jumps up and says, "Well, hey, I'll auction off a rendering. You know, I'll do a rendering of your car, you Mr. Audience Participant, Mr. or Miss." Mm-hmm. So we started the bidding on that. And that went to 10 grand.
Yeah.
Like, I paid 10 grand
and
for a Foose rendering.
And not to be outdone, Dave Kindig did the same thing.
Yeah, he jumped up and said, "I'll auction off a rendering custom done for your vehicle." Mm-hmm. And that went to 10 grand.
It's insane.
And then Gary Case finds a poster from the event, one of the signage. And
right.
And all the, you know, a bunch of builders and organizers sign it. And I think that went to 2,500 or 3,000 or something.
Yeah.
And it just kept going and going. So the 50-50 raffle generated like 25,000 on its own.
Right.
Pretty close to it. So one individual took home 12 and a half as his half of the 50-50 win. Another individual matched that and gave it back to the Sinise Foundation. The guy that won didn't give his back. Somebody else right. said, hey, how much is the 50-50? Oh, well, I'll throw another 12.5 in.
God, so dang I think it.
With the 50-50 earnings and all of the crazy auction stuff and the ride-along, you know, high bid thing that happened before and a couple other, you know, fundraising things, on paper, I think it added up to be about $70,000.
Was unreal. Raised. Unreal.
It was. It was really awesome.
Plus, they had that pinstriping auction as well.
Yes.
Which raised like another, what, $64,000?
Separately. Yeah. Separately. And that was for the children's charity through the racetracks, through Speedway.
Oh, gotcha. Gotcha.
And so, I mean, $120,000-$130,000 of this event was raised to help other people. So the hot rodding community is one of the most generous there is, for sure.
For sure.
And just to see that go down was really, really exciting.
You said it perfectly. It was lightning in a bottle.
Yeah.
I don't know if we'll see that again. It would be cool if we did, but
I'll tell you what. If you're on the fence about going to the Triple Crown of Rodding, get off the fence and right. go there next year.
For
because
sure.
25 is going to be the leap between 23 and 24 was pretty significant. 23 was an awesome show. We talked about it on
right.
this podcast. 23 to 24 was a big step up, and 24 to 25 is going to be again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in a variety of areas. It was a number of cars. It was quality of cars. It was, you know, these type of activities and just the overall feel good, the number of vendors, they're improving in every single direction. So I'm super excited to see what gets pulled off
yeah.
for 25.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen some constructive feedback on some things that could be better and on their, like their Facebook, group that the Triple Crown had, and they are very responsive. With okay, we will look at that. We will get that fixed. We've already taken steps to make that better for the next show.
Yeah.
So I love that they are constantly wanting to improve it, and not say this show is great. We don't have to do anything better now. This is the greatest show ever. That's we can rest on our laurels. They just want to keep making it better and better and better.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of media that went out, a lot of photographs and videos.
Mm-hmm.
One just got finished yesterday and released yesterday as we record this, done by the guys at In the Garage Media. So it's hosted by Brian Brennan, who we had on stage for
right.
the award ceremony. And they did a really nice job. It's, 24 minutes long.
Nice.
And it's a nice walkthrough. And there's a cool scene, a little vignette where Kyle Tucker is picking his pick vehicle for the weekend, and he's telling you what he's looking for, you know, which I thought was pretty cool. The only criticism I have of that, and I understand why, is that they didn't capture the auction to the degree that it really was, only because I don't think they had the resources to do it. I mean, you'd need multiple cameras and you know, lots of audio to be in different places, and nobody expected this,
right?
So they kind of they covered it, you know, they tell you what happened. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the actual action. If you jump on YouTube, I think you can find video streams of the auction. You can see what
cool.
went down from people's phones, you know, because it was something else.
What I thought was really funny was after that, after the pants were auctioned off, Tim Strange says, you know, we just got $10,000 for these pants, you know, and Chip Foose dropped out after 100 and just looks at him.
Yeah.
Foose came up, okay, well, here's what I'm going to do now. And that's
next
when
thing
he
you know,
auctioned off his rendering.
Next thing you know, Foose raises 10 grand for it.
Right. Yeah.
Take that, Timmy boy.
Yeah, right.
It was great. And it was all in such good fun, you know?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah, that was, oh my gosh. I still keep thinking about that show, and I'm telling everybody I know about it who will listen to me for more than 3 seconds. So,
yeah. So the quick rundown of some of the interviews that we did, Brian Finch, and his whole Autocross Share the Ride program, Randy from Moore and Giles Leather, Rod from Griot's Garage, Justin Olson from Dakota Digital, Mike Hammer came by from Willwood Brakes, we had Steve Tracy from Advanced Plating, we had Ryan Steele from GearStar Transmissions and Yank Converters, John Babcock came up from Powermaster Alternators, Chip Foos, Kyle Tucker, Posey, Ken Fennecle from Posey's Rod and Custom, Jason Slover from Pete and Jake's, Brennan did an interview, Matt Graves from American Powertrain, John Carolla from Crazy Paint. Wayne Carini didn't make it, but he was supposed to be there. Right. I think he was running around. He got tied up because they have a big autograph signing session where you can meet these people and hang out, which is also a really cool thing. Mm-hmm. We had Jeremy Gerber from the Roadster Shop, Alan Johnson, Johnson's Hot Rod Shop. We had Cooper Johnson from O'Reilly, from their national office, their event office, Norris Marshall with Blueprint Engines. Jim Ring came up from the Ring Brothers, Glenn Grosich from Billet Specialties. ARP had Bob Florian up there talking about their support of events, that one and others. Of course, Troy Trepanier. And at one point, Foose was walking by when I was interviewing Troy, and he jumped up on stage, and we had kind of a little free-for-all going there.
That was really cool.
Yeah. That was all about the time that Foose and Troy went to Tokyo with Brad Gerber, who was with Hot Rod and is now with the NHRA, and Foose got his head shaved the first night.
Right. I mean, that wasn't an interview. That was just three guys chewing the fat and talking about the good old days, you know? That was not an interview.
Brian Downard from Low Car came by, Kindig, Jim Reese with CPP, and then Tim Hughes with PPG, you know, spoke with Alloway throughout the weekend, you know, so just so many, you know, people that have cool stuff to say and share were sharing their stories from the stage as the backdrop of all the action going on throughout the event. So it was cool.
It was cool.
Honored and proud to be part of it.
For sure. Likewise. I mean, just the small contribution I was able to give, I hope I can do it again next year.
Well, you did more than a small contribution. I mean, running those screens was a big deal, and a little pressure there, here and there, and
yeah.
You pulled it off.
We pulled it off, though. It was all right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was cool. We had what we needed, and you know, hats off to the sound crew that was there from Gulf South Productions. These guys, probably the most professional outfit I've ever worked with in my life.
Yeah, and all the stage video things that you've done, they were the best one.
Yeah, they were the best.
No, but they were awesome. It's one of those crews that, you know, they got hired to show up and do what they do, and we asked them to do all this other stuff, and they did that too.
And the answer was always, sure, I got you. Absolutely, yes. Never, always yes. Never did they say no.
Yeah, so our life was made easy.
For sure. For sure. And, Joel was the guy, our guy that we dealt with primarily. He was unbelievable. Shout out to you, Joel.
Yeah, it was cool.
Yeah.
And a lot of these companies, you know, I ended up doing the video edits of all of the screen video and got a lot of great feedback and a lot of help from, you know, the companies that were providing some of the footage for that stuff.
Right.
And it went well. Yeah. So looking forward to upping that game next year, man.
Good deal. Yeah, you put a couple of hours into this prepping for this show. You did quite a bit. So,
well, I am a member of Overthinkers Unanimous, and you know, I role play all these different scenarios of how these things can go. And one of the cardinal rules is never debut a new piece of equipment at a live event, and that's exactly what we did.
Yes, we did, and it went off perfectly. Went off without a hitch.
Yeah, something we needed to rely on. We broke out for the first time. So, but that is kind of the conundrum, you know, between doing that event or SEMA or some of the others, where my perspective and your perspective on this is very different from a showgoer, because we get to be part of the show, we get to kind of help put the show on. But then we got to rely on everybody else to see it, you know? So
true.
All the pictures and video and everything, there are times, and you'll remember that when Gary Case was starting this event a couple of years ago,
yep,
and we first talked about it, he's like, hey, can you do some video at this event? And what did I tell him?
He said, Gary, I'd rather just be there just to see it.
Yeah, I just want to go.
I don't want to work. I just want to go, man.
I just want to go.
He was like, absolutely not. You're doing video.
And that didn't work.
No.
But that's cool. I mean, if I was walking around there not working, I would have been very anxious.
Oh, for sure. Well, you'd be thinking of ways that you would want to do the production differently, and you would start taking notes, and then you would start talking to Gary, and then you would just be in the show again. So,
well, let's be real. When I say work, you know, my work really isn't work. You know, it's just getting a little closer to stuff than people that come through the
gate.
Well,
ramping up to it was effort. You definitely put effort
in. For sure. Yeah, for sure, for sure. But it all paid off. Happy
in spades, yeah, it sure did.
Yeah.
Man.
We owe Gary another sandwich from Slimans.
We do.
Cleveland. Yeah.
Got to go back out to Cleveland for a schwitz and then go see Gary.
And go to Slimans.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. All right. Well, we could go on forever on this, but we can't. How's that for a statement?
Nice.
I'm pretty sure that all of our at-home listeners are they're getting the shakes because they want to know the answer to our three-parters here.
They do. They certainly do. And so we're not going to make them wait anymore. So, Kevin, I asked you, who's the first automaker, the manufacturer, the model year, and the model to first offer remote keyless entry?
Oh, yeah. I remember getting this one wrong.
Well, I told you I was going to give you, if you got any part of it right, I was going to give you the whole thing.
Yeah.
And you said 1977 Mercedes-Benz on the S-Class. And that's a hell of a guess. I mean, you would think that they would be the first. Unfortunately, neither of those answers are correct.
All right.
The first remote keyless entry was offered. It was a European automaker. However, it was our friends in France at Renault on the 1982 Renault Fuego.
The Fuego?
Yeah, man.
Wow.
It was an option.
That is a great, great question.
Thank you.
Because the Fuego, man.
Mm-hmm.
Back in those days, do you remember the ad campaign? Renault was the one to watch.
Yep.
Yeah. And the Fuego, sure, of course, is French for fire.
Mm-hmm.
Which, coincidentally,
it's Spanish for fire, isn't it?
Fuego, yeah, I guess so. Yeah. But it rhymes with Fiero, sort of.
It does, kind
of. Which kind of leads into the answer of the second question.
Ooh, king of segues, at it again.
Five, four, and five. All right. I don't feel so bad because, first of all, I didn't think it would be that late. 83?
82.
82.
Yeah.
Boy, what took everybody so long? I guess it's...
Well, Ford did have that remote, that keyless entry with the buttons on the doors.
Yeah.
But the first radio transmitter key fob remote keyless entry was 82.
Yeah, interesting. I think this all comes down to the transistor radio and hearing aids and small batteries and transmitters.
Mm-hmm.
That stuff. So, makes sense. Sure. All right. So, I asked you... a two-parter. What was Pontiac's first mid-engine car? The bonus, when did we see Fiero appear at Pontiac? And your answer, the first one you said, first mid-engine Pontiac was a Fiero.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, why not? Unfortunately, that's not correct.
Really? I'm shocked.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know this until I knew it. There was a vehicle that Pontiac did to compete with the Chevrolet Vega and, well, actually, way ahead of this, in the late 60s, Pontiac was looking at doing a very economical, fuel-efficient small vehicle. So they created a thing called the X4, which was a kind of a prototype. It relied on a four-cylinder radial midship engine that was bolted to a subframe with a solid axle with no rear suspension.
Oh, my.
Yes.
That does not sound comfortable at all.
One of the reasons why it didn't make production.
How about
it? So the X4 in the mid-60s, I don't know the exact date. The second half of that question was, what was the first year that the word Fiero appeared at Pontiac? Your guess was 1983.
Yeah.
No doubt influenced by my curveball of saying 1983 a few times.
Yeah, thanks. You're an influencer now. Look at you.
Yeah, yeah. Just playing little mind games with
you. Yeah, he sucks.
Notice when I recalled the Fuego answer, I said 1983 as well.
Yeah, you did, didn't you?
83 on the brain. The actual answer was 1969.
Really?
And there was a Pontiac show car called the Fiero in 1969.
Oh, man.
Did not know either. So,
gee whiz.
We
great
both got
questions,
five parts
Kev.
Wrong. Yeah. Yeah, Kelly's like, what's with the Fiero trivia all the time? Come on.
Well, Paul would like it.
Well, it's just, I don't know. It is kind of interesting.
It is kind of interesting.
To paraphrase Kelly's dad, my father-in-law, Fritz, you think you know and you don't.
Right on. Well, the thing is, I know I don't know. I'm just trying to wag it out.
Yeah, there you go. I tried to sound that one out.
Yeah.
To no avail.
To no avail. It's all right. We'll live another day, and we'll answer another time. So,
oh, just wait till next time, man. I got a great one for you next time.
Oh, great. Can't wait. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, and so I'll preface the next trivia question with the fact that normally I do not accept influences from other outside people.
Oh. You got, what, is Yardley give you a question now?
No, but this was given to me, not like, here, ask this on the show, right, on your podcast. This was a piece of trivia that landed on my phone from a friend of mine, and I went, I got to use that.
Oh, so, man.
You'll have to tune in next time.
Ooh, the teaser. Nice.
Yeah. All right. Well, we invite you to join us next year at the Triple Crown of Rodding, triplecrownofrodding.com. Jump on YouTube, also type in 2024 Triple Crown of Rodding official documentary, and you'll find that 24-minute video. It's almost like being there. Just add a lot of, you know, take a squirt bottle of lighter fluid and squirt it right at the very end and blow that up a lot, and that's really what it was like, because the video kind of waters down the ending. But you have to be there. It's one of those things.
Yeah, for sure.
Come on, join us. All right, my man. You got any other parting thoughts on this?
Oh, man.
Convoluted episode of VA Radio?
Fiero suck.
That's for Paul and Chris Ron at the Stubborn German
That's
Pilot.
Right. Chris Ron, too.
Fiero pilot.
Oh, boy.
All right. Well, this was fun.
This was fun, man.
Talking about things that other people missed out on, you know, can be not that cool.
But we don't want them to miss out on them. We want them to go.
Exactly. We're wetting the palate, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And I guess next big event up for us is SEMA.
Yeah. Yes, it is. You will be sans cue ball at SEMA this year, though, however.
Aye.
Yeah. But you'll have our good buddy, Mr. Brian Wibbenmeyer.
Brian Wibbenmeyer, parts guy, previous V8 radio vet. But then we come right back and do our big 20th anniversary showing at the Muscle Car and Corvette Nationals.
Yes.
And that will not be sans cue ball.
No, that will be avec cue ball.
Avec. Nice.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Another trivia question. What the heck does that mean?
That will be with cue.
That's French for fuego, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
So, if you're listening to this, make your travel plans now to join us at the Muscle Car and Corvette Nationals in Chicago in November. We're going to have 6 V8 Speed and Resto Shop cars that we built on display. Pretty cool. It's going to be super exciting, celebrating our 20th anniversary, and you can get your whatever you want signed by Mr. Cueball. How about that?
How about that? All right. I'll bring my Sharpies.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. You got that brand new box just waiting.
That's right. That's right.
All right. All right. Well, this was fun. Thanks for joining us once again on V8 Radio. If you dug this episode, hit that subscribe button and poof, like magic, they will appear in your inbox or on your subscribe feed, wherever it is you tune into your podcasts. And that's about all we got. I'm Kevin Oostie for Mike, Mr. Q-Ball Clark. We say keep the shiny side up, always reach for that triple crown, and we will see you next time on VA Radio.